Blog Talk Radio.
Special guest tonight are the Gripweeds, and we have Kurt and Kristen, and MK is going to be on, and we're going to spend the evening with the Gripweeds. We're going to let you know, as the listeners, all about them. We want you to hear their music. Forever Is Today was the first song, and that was we're going to play other songs from their they have working on their fifth studio CD. So, and that is Strange Change Machine, I believe. And Kurt, are you on?
Yeah. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. And thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, it's just great to have you guys on.
Yeah, we just finished our new album today, actually.
That's Kristen.
Hi, Kristen.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yep, we're wrapping it up. We're just working out the final touches tonight.
Well, that's great. So you guys have been in the studio today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we live at our studio, so we're always here.
Do you ever leave the studio?
Me? No. In fact, I barely leave the house these days. But it's not so bad because it's snowing outside and, you know, and it's cold.
We got a big snowstorm here in Jersey today, so it's not bad that we're locked inside. So.
Yeah, I'm in Ohio, and we had around 12 inches of snow yesterday. So.
Well.
Yeah, that was... And you talk about, you know, being in the house. It's, you know, there's no better place to be than right here tonight where we can listen to the Gripweeds and listen to the music and don't have to go out and do anything. So it's cool. It's really, really good to have you guys
on.
Do we have – oh, it looks like we had another caller on. But if you would like to call in and ask Kurt or Kristen anything about the Gripweeds, talk to them. Our call-in number is 646-595-2483, and we have a chat room going on. Marcy, are you there?
I'm here.
That's co-host Marcy, and she's got the chat room. And I think we have, let's see, this might be Michael.
This is a virtual party.
Is that MK?
MK
no,
is here,
Kurt. Hey, MK.
Hey.
I'm here.
He's in Philly.
I'm in Philly, and I don't want to be a dork listening to my radio and my cell phone at the same time. So.
Are you snowed in Philly?
Oh my God! Yeah, we have 30 inches of snow here, so I've been snowing all day and.
Oh,
30 inches of snow.
Yeah, that's unreal. I know they've called off a lot of ball games and stuff, and it's just unbelievable. But it's really good to have you guys on, and we want to play some music tonight from the Gripweeds. We want to, as Kristen said, talk about the new album. So that's going to be out. When will that be available?
Well, that's going to be officially released in May on Rainbow Quartz Records internationally. But we are going to make that available to our fan base, our fan club, before the release. So probably around sometime in April, we're going to send out an email to our fans and say, hey, the new album's available. And actually, there's a little more to it. Maybe I think MK would be better to explain the nuts and bolts of what we're going to do, which might be a good idea now. So why don't you say something about that, MK?
Sure. The way we're going to do the release is for the fan base, people who sign up and join our fan club, there's going to be a free aspect to this album. There's 22 tracks. There's all kinds of material we've been working on for the last 5 years. This
wow.
is going to be a double. There's going to be a double CD, and a portion of this album, a good portion of this album, not just one song or two songs, but a large, a significant portion of this album is going to be available for free download. We're going to put it on Creative Commons license, and we're going to share it with our fan base in the world. Our goal is to get this free version of the album. Get a million downloads. We just want everybody to hear this this music. In addition to that,
listeners.
Please download it. And so,
please download this free music.
And then the
Go
second
ahead,
part of that is there's going to be the double CD. Then there will be the double CD, which will have a deluxe package that'll only be available at the Gripweeds website with even more material. And then we do have a vinyl version. There are a lot of, you know, audiophile vinyl aficionados out there, and there is a market for it. And, you know, we're analog kids ourselves, so we have to put this release out on vinyl. So that's the other option.
Vinyl is cool.
Yeah.
Vinyl is very cool, and, you know, vinyl's made kind of a resurgence in the last few years, which is really great because, you know, in the midst of all this internet piracy going on, which, you know, we understand, it's what is happening. In the midst of that, you've got kids kind of getting into the sound and the vibe of old vinyl. And so we kind of want to cater to that and make the album available in that format for ourselves, too, because it's so cool.
Yeah,
definitely something for everybody on this release.
This is great. Yeah, I've got a turntable here in my little office, my Studio One here, where we do the show, and
mm-hmm.
I spend like 80% of my life in this little room. So, yeah, I have a turntable, and I think it's really cool because I know a lot of folks that, like you said, MK, that, you know, are if it isn't vinyl, it's not real.
Right.
You know, they live back in that time, and it just brings back something for me. You know, it's just pretty cool to hear that. So that's really good that you guys are releasing that in multiple media forms.
It kind of changes the listening experience. When you're listening on vinyl, you're kind of, you know, you don't skip around songs unless you want to sit there by the turntable and move the needle yourself, and you're kind of locked in for the side. So you're going to listen to the whole album, then the side. Then you have a break where you flip the record over and start the second side. So there's natural breaks, and it's just a nice, warm, fuzzy experience.
And also all the artwork too that's involved. If anybody has ever gotten a Gripweed CD from us before, we have a lot of really cool artwork on our stuff. And
I hope this one will be good.
And this gives us an opportunity to, you know, put it out on the double fold.
I just want to jump on. Say that again?
Good, MK.
I just wanted to jump in with, and follow up with Kurt was talking about the experience of the vinyl. And and again, with the idea that we want to address every kind of listener out there. When I get a new album, you know, I burn it to my, you know, my iTunes. I have one finger on the fast forward button. That's one kind of audience. That there's going to be an MP3 aspect to this where people download and listen the way they listen to download. But the vinyl experience, that is a whole different thing. And there are a lot of people, just like you said, John, if it's not on vinyl, it's not real. I remember listening to The Wall. The rule was you had to listen, you know, when we were my friend in college, you had to listen to the, you know, side one to side four. So we would only put The Wall on if we were new. We're going to listen to the whole thing. And we sequence the tracks with that in mind. There is a specific sequence to this album for that listening experience, as well as the person who wants to go and pick and choose the songs they want to listen to.
Yeah, so basically we're catering to the thief who goes and steals the music with the MP3. Then we're catering to the audio files and everybody in between.
Oh, that's really good. So the CD will be two CDs. Will it be the same with vinyl, two vinyls?
Yeah, it has to be. The vinyl is kind of a very limited format in terms of time.
We have 25 songs? 24 of 25?
We have 22 songs.
22 songs, so there's a lot to fit. So there will be two CDs.
Yeah, and actually we sequenced it, as MK said, we sequenced the album with vinyl in mind, and that sequence will continue over to the CD, we think. Because it gives you, like I said before, about a nice natural break between side one and side two. We kind of want to have that on the CD too, where there's kind of an, you know, a halfway point in the record where you can catch your breath or something. So.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that would really understand that. And one part of the show we like to highlight indie musicians, and another part of the show we bring on, we have some rock and roll historians we bring on. We bring on different people from, you know, that are just really into the 60s music in the 70s. We've had, and one thing, last week we had Jimmy Walker, who was the drummer for the Knickerbockers. It's actually
cool.
From Bergenfield, New Jersey, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I grew up there, actually.
Yeah, he was talking about last week it was Bergenfield to L.A. when the boys went to Los Angeles.
I think those guys, the Knickerbockers, everybody thought they were the Beatles. Their song they had was so, if you listen to it, you'd say, wow, that's the Beatles, but it wasn't.
Well, the song Lies?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be the best Beatle imitation, but they weren't really trying to, but it came out, the vocals and everything. But listening to Jimmy talk about the 60s music and how that, you know, his beginning with the group and going through the music industry, you know, and we talked about the music industry, and you guys have touched on a lot already tonight. On, you know, the internet, where you can listen to music, you can get the MP3s, you can put it on your iTunes, you can do so much now, and I think one thing that might be missing is the listening experience that I had growing up, because we had a stereo in the living room, and it was the whole family's, and I had my Jimi Hendrix, and I would, you know, look around the living room, see if anybody's around. And then put it on, and I couldn't go anywhere, you know. I just had to sit right there and listen to it.
Yeah, I think there was just some sort of magic that was in the music back then.
People are multitasking now when they're listening.
We kind of missed the 60s, you know, to be old enough to really understand it. But, you know, when I was growing up, it was kind of like an archaeological dig to find all this great music from the 60s. You know, in a garage sale for a quarter or whatever, you know. And so it that even made it more exciting, because the music was really hard to find when we were growing up. And so that made it even more magical, you know. And now it's like everything's available, which is cool. I love being able to have all that music and stuff. But we still have that feeling of magic about the music industry and about music in general. And, you know, that's kind of where I think our heads are at. When we put something out, we want it to have that impact or that magic to a listener.
Oh, I would agree with that. And just to let the listeners know that you want to know anything about the gripweeds, go on to www.gripweeds.com. And you talked about all the information behind the upcoming album, Strange Change Machine. Talk about, guys, where that name came from.
Well, this is a two-part story.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead, Kurt. You tell the story.
Wait a minute.
I thought
were
it up.
Were you drunk
actually.
Again?
I thought it up. I kind of thought it up. There was this kid's toy, and it was a very dangerous kid's toy, called the Strange Change Machine, or something along those lines. And basically, it had this hot plate and this plastic creatures, or that you'd put these like cubes of plastic into this hot plate, and they would transform into creatures.
Oh, I remember
that. It was a very dangerous toy for a kid. They'd be burning their fingers and got, you know, who knows. But they certainly wouldn't have that toy around now. But I don't know. I just thought that name was very evocative of, you know, just what the Gripweeds music is in a way. And just the idea of, you know, putting something into a machine and having it come out transformed made me think of our music. You know, it's kind of like you write a song and you put it into the Gripweeds machine and it comes out this thing, you know. So that was the original thought. There's a lot you can do
with
it.
Yeah, that was the original thought. And you know, remember, this album has been 5 years in the making. When we did House of Vibes Revisited, that was like we took a break from that. We put that album out, and then Little Steven put out our greatest hit package, and we had to stop and regroup and, oh, we got to put, you know, do a couple of songs. So the Strange...
Well, yeah, we made some new songs for that, yeah.
Right. And so the Strange Change Machine idea was around, and I'm the marketing guy. So I start looking around with the Strange Change Machine, and there is a large... It's just really weird. You find everything on the Internet. But there's just a large group of people that, you know, 60s and 70s toys and websites and chat sites and people talking about these toys from the 60s and 70s. And there's thousands of people on these sites just reminiscing about Tippett and Pop-O-Matic Trouble and all this, you know, these games. And Strange Change Machine, there's like a big following about this game. And I'm like, that's it. We're locked into this thing because there's a lot of people who are going to recognize this, who are the people that are really going to understand and get into our music. And also, it's these times. Think of the last 5 years. You know, in 2005, everything was great. People were buying houses. And look at where we've come in 5 years. Now we have everything's crazy and strange. And
yeah, especially the music business, because
right. –
You know, what's happened to it in the past 5 years, you know, we've got an attitude now. We're really great. We're hooked up with the label that's just, we're just like the heck with the way the business is. We're just going to get this music out there. It's just become real difficult in the music business to make a living and to get your stuff out. It's in a total change. The whole business has gone through a change, and the way the computers affected it. And that's kind of what there's like a little background story to the name too. It's just the changes and how the band works and how the music works, and everybody in the music business has gone through this change in the past 5 years. So
and it's strange
because everybody loves music, but nobody wants to, like, we're going through this thing where we have to figure out, no one wants to pay for it anymore. How can you be a musician? It's really hard. You know?
I don't think people realize the damage that, I mean, that's being caused. I won't say that they're doing it, but it's just the general trend. You know, music is an industry, and, you know, in order for a musician like ourselves to be in a space to create and to write songs and stuff and to have that space to do it, there has to be some aspect of it that supports you.
Right.
And when the bottom is, when the rug is pulled out of the music industry and all of a sudden no one can make a living, labels are you know, closing up, record stores are gone, even space in department stores is being curtailed to music. It's all very, very hard on a musician now to justify spending years and years or thousands of dollars to make records and hope to get some sort of return other than the satisfaction that you're making music for yourself.
Well, one thing that people probably don't know about the Grip Weeds is that, we've been around for a long time, and we record all our own music, but we've built our studio from the ground up for many years. And we actually bring in other clients now, and we record other people's music as well as our own. But what we found is when we first started to wanted to record, it was just too expensive. We decided we were going to take it on ourselves, and we all invested in a space and learning the equipment, and we've spent years developing, the talent to learn how to record.
We didn't realize just how well we set ourselves up for this particular client climate, because we didn't know at the time exactly what we. Of course, we didn't know the future. We didn't know where the music business would go.
Yeah, we just wanted to control. We just wanted to be able to record our music and get what we needed without paying. We couldn't afford the rates for studios. I mean, at the time we started recording, there wasn't as much home recording going on as there is now.
We were having trouble finding a sympathetic engineer or producer who would understand what we wanted to do and not mess it up. And so
that's a really good point.
Yeah, so, I mean, first it was kind of like, well, let's make our... We were making demos. That's what it was. And to people out there who don't know what a demo is, if you write a song, let's say I write a song, I'd like to do a quick recording of it so that the rest of the band can understand how it goes and communicate, the changes of the song in there and maybe the whole vibe of it. So you'd make a demo. And we always liked those demos because they carried with them some kind of emotion in the performance that was very genuine and very unforced and cool. And we'd go into the studio, we'd try going into the studio, and we'd spend all this money, and we'd come out with something we didn't like. We'd go back to the demo and be like, well, we kind of like the demo better. So that was really the crossroads of where we decided, well, we kind of have an inclination towards recording anyway.
Yeah,
so why don't we just put our money there? And that's what we did.
When someone, what people probably don't realize unless they've done recording of their own music is that you're really at the mercy of the person whose place you're recording at. I mean, they could be very talented, but they have their ideas and their ways and their sounds.
That can be good, too.
And it could be fantastic. I mean, it could be fantastic, but it also could not be what you really want, and you're at their mercy. So we're just lucky that right now we've developed enough skill to put out a really great sounding record. This new record sounds fantastic. We laugh about it. It's like, it sounds expensive, but
well, really it is expensive because we spent so much of our time and effort making it, and so it is an expensive record from that standpoint, but luckily we own the studio, so we don't have to pay for the time.
Well, you guys made some great points on the music industry, and one thing, it's like touches a few things that I've talked about on the show. There was a band that I don't know if you've heard of the Toy Horses, but they're from England, and they I covered a music festival last summer, which you guys should look into. It's the Midpoint Music Festival in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's just a great festival, but. The Toy Horses, it would be great, it's not that far from here, so it would be good.
Okay, well, maybe we can put that together.
I can send you some stuff on that festival.
That'd be great.
It's awesome, but the Toy Horses were from Manchester, I believe, and they came over, and they were just in there, they did everything themselves, they recorded everything in their room, in their house. And the drummer from Wilco, which I can't remember the guy's name right now, he heard them on MySpace, contacted him, and then they came over, and he has a record label, and they recorded on his record label. But it was just kind of interesting how that all worked together. And when I talk to folks, you talk about your music, and your music is yours. It's your babies. It's your art. And that's how you describe yourself and express yourself. Last night there was a great interview of Patti Smith on PBS. I don't know if you guys caught that, but
no.
It was just so good. It was talking about her way of expressing herself through music and her poetry, and the same things that you're talking about, ownership of the songs. It's, you know, not giving that away to anybody. When someone comes in, I interviewed Ivan Brown, who was in the Lemon Pipers, who had Green Tambourine.
Yeah.
And they were students at Miami of Ohio University, and they were just having a great time. He said, we were a long-haired rock band. We were having a great time.
There you go.
Somebody heard them, wanted them to be on, oh, gosh, I forget the record label, but I'll think of it. It was Buddha Records. They took them to New York City. They said they just, like, you know, overnight they were there. They set up a record contract with them. And he said, we were, like, would play 10, 12-minute songs, psychedelic rock songs. And before the recording was over, they were a bubblegum group.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one thing about the this whole music industry that has changed. I wouldn't say it's for the better either. It's good for us to be doing our own music because we've spent the last 15, 20 years doing it. And we've really had a learning curve, you know, where we really had to figure out everything, how to record, how to put the mic, place that in front of the drum or the amp, you know, and then how to arrange the songs so that they'd be at their most effective. All those things we had to figure out for ourselves because there was nobody there to help us. And back then, the Lemon Pipers in the 60s, 70s, and even 80s would go into a studio, and you would have a professional engineer who knows his stuff, professional equipment. You'd have a producer who's ready, who's dialed into what's happening on the radio and how to make a record that's exciting and hit-worthy.
And
you'd have your
money,
access
to
those people. You don't have that so much these days. I mean, I'm one of those people now because I've spent so much time with it, and we run the studio at House of Vibes, and that's kind of what I do now. But, you know, that's changing in the industry where you know, more and more people are doing it at home. But what you don't understand is that there's a tremendous learning curve to put out something that's going to be at a level where people are going to, where it's going to turn people's heads, you know.
And that was Peter Gabriel said in the 80s, someday everybody's going to be writing music, and that day is now. And what he also said is, you're going to get a lot of crap with a lot of great stuff. Now, I agree with everything we're being said about the music industry here. I don't necessarily see it as all negative. If you were locked into the old model and the old school, and look, the record industry is at fault for doing this. All they've been doing for the last 15 years is reselling their old catalogs, which kept the industry afloat until now. And no development of new talent has happened. Now, after the last million-selling, you know, NSYNC album happened in 2001, that was it. Seen the industry 15% a year. So, but what you have now in this industry, where I believe we're really poised to succeed, is now such a word of mouth industry. When I talk about the industry, I don't mean talk about the machine. I talk about the cloud, the MP3, the people are out there on the internet. And now it's word of mouth. In general, commercial radio, people are turned off by commercial radio. So now we're looking for our friends to give us recommendations. Hey, check this out. And I think, and this is the other thing about Strange Change Machine with regard to the title and the music, we cover that there's such a diversity of music on this record. And I said in the beginning, there's something for everybody on this record. And somebody's going to hear a song when they download this free version, and they're either going to go, I like it, or I don't like it, or this is pretty cool. But the chances are, when you like something, and I'm not projecting out to the entire population. Essentially, if you find something or discover something and get excited about it, usually you want to share it with somebody. And I think that's going to happen. And forget the artwork, forget the image of the band, forget everything. the music on this record, I think, is really going to connect with people in a really cool way. And the way we're releasing it, there's the fan that's just going to buy the CD, the people are going to download it, but I think people are going to spread this music. I believe in it. It's good. I think it was just really cool. I play for my friend. They play for my wife. I look at their reactions. I'm a pretty smart guy. I'm not going to sit there and, oh, please pull some smoke up my dress and tell me how great this is. I think I'm getting honest reactions. And it's,
MK's
it's
our biggest awesome. Fan.
Yeah. So I think that's cool. With regards to the industry, with the word of mouth way it is now, look, if you're good, I'm always going to say with this record, I'm going to let the music do the talking. I'm going to shut up. Here, play this song. If you like it, great. Every time we play live, we sell out of our merch. This is to an audience who's never seen us before. When we opened for the Smithereens a couple of weeks ago, people in that age group that was the Smithereens fan, and it was from like 8 to 80, but people were coming up to us
yeah,
saying,
pretty much.
Oh, my God, you guys are keeping rock and roll music alive. And I'm like, well, it never really died. You're just with you. Some aspects of the industry have died. Some band members have died, but there's work.
Not in our group.
Music alive, and it was great. They were really appreciative, and I think we're gonna roll with that.
Yeah, well, the industry has just changed in a strange way.
Yeah, and it's coming out of a strange change machine.
Machine, which yeah, that's your computer.
That's good. And this is the fifth studio album for the Gripweed. So it's www.gripweeds.com. Get all the information there. And we're talking live with Kurt, Kristen, and MK from the Gripweeds. And if you want to call in and ask a question, call in 646-595-2483. And this is John Talk Radio. This is streaming live on the internet on Blog Talk Radio. And it's one thing, guys, about this show is it's kind of been my baby. You know, I'm the guy, I've talked to people before and I listen to music, and I'm the guy that says, hey, you got to hear this. You know, and I would do this with CDs or with whatever. Now I can do it on the radio show. And I've reached folks, you know, I've interviewed bands from Australia and Africa and England, and I do it all from my little room here, and it's just kind of, you talk about a strange.
it's cool. I mean, that's the upside of things. You know, you get exposure now at the click, you know, at a click to the world, you know, and that's great. That's really great. What used to take, you know, so much effort and, you know, work to distribute, to get your music out to Africa is now at a click, you know, if they actually have a computer
amazing.
In Africa.
Yeah, it's totally amazing. And to hear, there was a band I had on called Baka Beyond. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of them.
No.
Oh, unbelievable band. They're so talented. And the Baka people are, they're around Cameroon, and they're actually a pygmy tribe that the guy in the band, it slipped my mind, him and his wife spent 2 years. They left their job, went over there to Africa and lived with these people for 2 years, learned their music, their tribal music, and then have brought that back and recorded it. It's, to me, that just blows my mind.
It's like a Graceland thing, right?
Well, with the Paul Simon stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they talk about that a little bit. I think that was an inspiration. But the music that the tribe sings is their historic tribal rhythms that have been handed down from these generations. And that's what, like, you know, I can feel with you guys, that same thing with music. I mean, once you get bit by the music bug, it's just, it's hard to, you know, there's other things that you do and you do things that, you know, in your life, but it just gets, you just go right back to that. It's like this central place.
I think all of us have always been, you know, that's always been a big thing for us, music. It's not just...
I think it's why we've managed to stay together as a band so long, too, is that we've made it our life together. You know, we have Kurt and I married, and his brother plays guitar in the band, and we have and Mike has been with us for what, 5-6 years now. So
and Kristen and I met
since 2003.
We were in the New York club scene with doing some things when we met, but it's like we've just all collectively built this band and invested in this band, and it's a family, and I think that's why we've been together and stayed together, just because, you know, it's not just a side thing. We've made it our life, so that's why it works, you know. It's not just a side thing. So.
Well, you can definitely tell that. I mean, I listen to a lot of music. I actually, you know, the week of the show, I try to, like, you know, drown myself in the music of the guest that's going to be on, and I've listened to a lot of your music, and I wanted to say, you know, to the listeners out there, that if you want to hear music that is reminiscent of the 60s and 70s, but it gives you the feeling of right now, and you guys have your own sound.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and I listen to music, and sometimes, like, oh, that sounds like this band, or I can see this, but you guys, I can hear influences, there's no doubt, there's Beatle influences, if Michael Kelly takes this right, but I hear a lot of McCartney bass runs there, you know.
Sure.
Which is great. It's like, and you guys were talking about the albums and the recording, and I kind of sometimes go back to McCartney's first album.
Yeah, that's a great album.
Yeah, and where he just kind of was in this thing with Abbey Road and with the band, and then he just got away and did his own thing where he played all the instruments, and it has a crude kind of sound to it. But
I think
so
for him
great.
it was cathartic, because he was in such a bad place with the breakup of the Beatles, and the music just helped him cope with it. And, you know, that's similar with us in terms of, you know, our music. Our songs, you know, they start from a genuine place. They come from a real place or a real experience. Is that that's at the base of the song. And so, you know, that gets carried through to the end of the recording once the Gripweeds have put their mark on it. You still got that basic song in and of itself, which has carries some kind of message with it or something. And so that might be why we don't sound like a ripoff of everybody, because there is something, at least, you know, in our songs, there's something genuine and unique, you know, that we're not just chord changes.
And we see that in our reviews where it lists all the Birds or the Who or the Beatles. And I, you know, I agree with that to the point. I don't say we don't sound like the Who. I wouldn't be in the band. We don't sound like the Who or the Beatles or the Birds. I think we evoke those bands. I think it reminds people of that classic period of, you know, those are who our influences are. Yeah, I'm not allowed to tell you who my influences are under my contract.
Go ahead, MK.
Involved, like,
who are you
a lot of bands from the 80s. But we do evoke those bands in a period of time. And again, especially with this album, Strange Change Machine, we are just covering a lot of ground. And getting to the relationship of the band, what's it like to be a Gripweed? You know, listen carefully to what Kristen said. We're a family. I'm married to Kurt. Rick is the brother to Kurt. I'm the bass player who's been in the band since 2003, going on my whatever umpteenth year. So all the things that happen in a family, not always smooth sailing. Don't worry, kids. I'm not going to air any laundry. But tensions and the discussions and the relationships of keeping that together, this music, we all come together for that cause. And it's all, and that is reflective. And I think 5 years is a long time. I've had 2 kids in 5 years. I mean, there's a lot of change that's happened as musicians, as producers. Kurt got Digital Performer to create the music, a sequencer, when we were right in the middle of Giant on the Beach. So now he's really at home with the technology, and we use both. We use the analog, we use the tape, we use the technology. We're all growing as musicians. Rick has works with other people. Kurt has produced the last three Smithereens albums. I mean, we're all doing things. Kristen is tucked away in her room on her headphones and her computer's working on her flute parts and everything else she works on. She wants to get a banjo. All of those things are reflected in this new record. And, you know, it was a lot of work to get here. But now that it's finished and we're mastering, we're like looking back and going, wow, this is, you know, when we're in the middle of it a year ago, 6 months ago, and we're butting heads. But now look at where we are today and this record. Man, it was worth it. And we can say, and that's why we keep pushing forward, because it is
worth it. I always think it's worth it. I mean, you know, I think the bands that get along the most, that have no troubles at all, usually the music comes out like, you know, bland, you know, wallpaper. And I think when there is a little tension or where there's strong feelings, that means that there's something worth fighting for.
Like the kinks.
When people are passionate, that's really what you want anyway. You want people to be passionate about their art and their music. And so that, to me, is a tip-off, you know, that well, I guess we got something of quality here, because MK is very passionate about his bass part, you know.
Well, also because you have four people that are really good musicians working together, there's always give and take and push and pull, and that's what makes it interesting. That's why we really sound like a band. Like, we were just listening to a song today we finished up. I'm like, there's just so much interaction that's going on, and we've been playing together for so long. It's like you really hear that in this record. It's a band, you know. It's not a solo person with a backing band. It's four people that are constantly interacting, and it makes it interesting that we've been able to do it and not kill each other.
Yeah, and like Kristen's parts are they're, you know, they're magical. Her guitar parts, when she spends a lot of time, a lot of effort to craft these parts and make them really work in the track. And MK does the same thing on bass, and like, I'll be listening to a song that I've written with these two guys on it and Rick, and you know, I'll hear bubbling up this little great bass run and go, wow, that's really cool. I would have never thought of that. Phenomenal, you know, and it just adds just an extra layer to what was already there, you know, and it makes it our own. It makes it a band performance or, you know, song or whatever.
Yeah, because you have to learn how to balance your work, how you work. You have to learn how to work with people, and you have to give and take, and that's why bands don't last. It's like people, you have to get out of it what you need as a musician. And when people do hear this new record, we're kind of wondering what they're going to say, because there's a lot of different kinds of songs on here. That's because we like a lot of different kinds of sounds and music. It's not a theme record. We go all over the place on this record, I mean, but we're not sure. We're listening to it going, wow, there's a lot of stuff
on
here.
It's all stuff that I like.
It's all stuff that we like.
I think if you're a Gripweeds fan and you know our music, then you'll hear some sounds or some our style that we're known for is definitely on the album. But then there's some growth, some evolution, some expansion into doing other things, or maybe going a little bit further than we have before. And it's good to do that when you have a double album of material, when you've got, you know, 22, 23 songs. And, you know, we'd like to hold the listener's attention throughout a record. And if you go on there with a song that sounds, you know, song after song with kind of the same thing, it's not really going to hold people's attention, especially over a double album. So we want people to be, you know, maybe, you know, caught off a little bit here and there, or like, what's going to come next, you know, and get a well-rounded experience when they've heard the album, kind of like they've been someplace.
Well, that's a good thing. When the creativity of the band comes out, and when you hear something new, you think, you know, there's growth there. You know, it's not they're not trying to recapture the same sound. So I think that's really great. But we do have a question.
Oh, great!
From a caller, would you like to ask the Gripweeds a question?
Yes. I just listened to him, and he's talking about the music industry. And, of course, I fought as a rock and roll historian. The key thing I can remember that Capitol Records right now depends so much on the Beatles and the Beach Boys for their back catalog to make up all their stuff. It's amazing that most of their money is made between those two groups yet to this day. And I think when I heard their first song, I think they're heavily influenced a little bit by Tom Petty. I could tell that it sounded like a little bit of that Byrd-style guitar there and everything.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, you know, Tom Petty's influenced by the Beatles and the Byrds, and so are we. I don't think we were necessarily directly influenced by Petty. So more like we both listen to the same music.
But he's got a real rock and roll style, and he uses a lot of guitars, and that's similar to us for sure.
Now, when you picked out your group's name, I got thinking about a group that was on ABC Dunhill called the Grassroots, and so I got thinking.
There you go.
I said that influence of there and everything. So it's very interesting how a group
point.
Takes their name. And
Where did your group come from, guys?
And did your name have any influence on the magic weed even?
Oh, there you go. Well, the name was the idea. The name was to get something that was earthy. And when we first formed, this was like the late 80s when we first came together in college, and we were kind of going against the trend at the time, which was very synthetic and synthesizery, and we just kind of, you know, didn't really like all that stuff. So we were more comfortable with the 60s and the music of the 60s, and we wanted something that was an organic, earthy-sounding name. And the Grassroots was definitely a thought of something like the Grassroots. And so we thought, Grassroots, Gripweeds, that's cool. And then the name Gripweeds was also the particular name of a character that John Lennon played in a movie called How I Won the War. He was Private Gripweed.
Right.
And
that
so,
is right. I forgot.
You know, it was like, wow, well, there you go. Grassroots, Gripweeds, earthy. And then maybe some people, like our listener here, would go, hey, maybe they're into drugs. Not that we are, but, you know, they could think that.
You know, you mentioned that machine, and that machine used to make the creepy crawlers.
Yeah.
And, hey, John, you have a good evening, too.
Well, thanks a lot for calling in, David.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Take care.
Well, it brings up a lot of good points about when the caller said that Capitol Records makes their money off the Beatles and the Beach Boys right now, and all of the different, I mean, I don't want to get on my soapbox, but, you know, with the different, you talked about mainstream radio, I think, Kurt, and...
I think MK did.
Oh, MK, yeah, I don't listen to it, but there's some just really great stations out there. I listened to a station out of Melbourne, Australia. I'll plug these guys because they're really worth it if you get a chance to listen to them. Triple R out of Melbourne, Australia. So here's some great music.
Is that a commercial station?
It's an independent station.
Yeah, well, that figures, you know, because, you know, like you're talking about Capitol Records, and what's happening with labels now is they're and what MK said was this is a trend that's been happening for many, many years. They're playing it very safe, and they're not giving a band – like the Beatles, let's say the Beatles came up now, they wouldn't get the chance to evolve. They wouldn't, you know, they would have been like, well, you didn't get a hit on the first album. Sorry, we're gonna can you. You know, you're dropped.
Yep.
You know, so there's a lot of talent out there that's being turned away because they're playing it safe. They're looking at their bottom line numbers. They're looking for short-term, bottom line numbers, you know. So... That's what's not happening. The music isn't getting out there, and it's a good thing the labels are going down because they don't matter anymore. They're not making the music that's reflecting the modern times. They're selling you the old music.
But it's also that the labels are you're limited. Their labels are only putting out a certain kind of act. Commercial radio is only putting out a certain kind of playlist, and what's not happening is that you're not discovering new artists and the old, you know, down the old pipe from the record company. And that's bubbling from the ground up. It's very grassroots. So John's telling us, did you hear about this one? Did you hear about this conversation that we're having is the new way that music gets spread through word of mouth. And it's going to be this show. John, I'm going to take a podcast of the show and send it to the 5,000 people on our mailing list. I mean, you know, this is, so you hear about what you were talking about, and people are going to pick up different pieces and learning. So, no, the Beatles would not made it the way they did in the past because they would have said, okay, come out with another song like Please, Please Me, as opposed to, like, developing. Each Beatles record was different. Look at the Rolling Stones. I love this comparison, is that you look at the Stones and you look at the Beatles. Now, I love both bands. However, the Stones pretty much do what they were doing and what they always did. Where the Beatles, if you look over the scope of their records, there's such a wide diversity that really, you know, their growth, spiritual, their personalities, their growth as musicians, you know, George Harrison playing the naughty chords, you know, he's playing a diminished seventh, and then, okay, now you have a whole different kind of song you can write. And that all started, that developed, and we've done this all along the way, and hopefully we can spread that word through, like, shows like this and people downloading that free Strange Change Machine album, and you won't burn your fingers.
There you go.
That's,
you know, the Beatles,
that's a guarantee.
The Beatles started, they were wide-eyed 20-year-old kids coming into the studio. They had no idea of, you know, other than their musical influences and their musical ability, which was great, no doubt about it. But, you know, they had a producer there, George Martin, who crafted their records and banged them into shape so that they would be at the level that they would, you know, sell what they sold and be the number one thing. So they had this incredible support system, the biggest label in the world, the greatest studio in the world, really, Abbey Road. And, you know, that's what's lost now. It's very difficult to get access to those people that can go, oh, I know what we can bring, that'll bring out a, you know, make that song come together for you, you know. That's what's missing now. You're getting everybody's got to wear all the hats approach.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And it's good for certain things, but then it's, in other ways, you're missing the outside perspective where someone says, that's a really good song, you should push that one. Or, I would take this song over to this guy and, you know, do this publicity with it or whatever, you know. But that's what's kind of missing now.
And so with the Beatles, before they went into the studio, remember they were in Hamburg for 2 years, and they were playing 8 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
They had they had that performance savvy. They had they were playing to hostile crowds, drunks and prostitutes all day. Yes, they were playing to a hostile crowd, and they learned to work an audience, and that comes with a live experience. We have a lot of live experience under our belt, collectively as a band and individuals. I've been playing forever. Since I'm, you know, 16 years old, I've been playing New Year's Eve. I'm done. I quit New Year's Eve forever. But you know, we have a lot of professional live experience, which command over your instrument. You understand how music works. It's a lot of things that come to it.
If you want to do music, it's, you, like Kristen said, you got to make it part of your life, and it does. It's not like cushy and comfortable all the time.
Oh no, it's
right?
Really, it's exhausting.
It's
really
exhausting.
Tough.
But that's what it takes to write songs. I just did a project with Pat Denizio, the Smithereens. He read an audio book. He's making an audio book, and I recorded it. And so he read his book to me, basically. I put it down on computer. And all his experiences of the music business when the Smithereens were coming up, and he was saying, you know, it's not easy. Writing songs is a hard it's a discipline and it's a craft. There's, you know, some songs come easy, that's true, but there are many, many songs that I've, you know, I'll struggle with to get them to work the way I want them to. And that's just part of the process. It's not, oh, let's record, you know, click, and it's very easy. No, it's not like that. It takes work. It takes attention and focus and that other thing, inspiration, to hit you, you know.
And then we come into the studio and screw everything up for them anyway.
Yeah, and then MK comes in. Oh.
So what song on the new album, I'll just go around, I'll start with Kristen. Are you the most proud of? Do you think that, is there one song that stands out for you?
On the new album? Wow. You know, I go back and forth between different songs, and I'm just blown away by, I don't think there's really any weak songs on this record. I mean, it's just overwhelming.
One.
One song that I like best.
Yeah, describe one song. How about that? Is that okay, John?
Yeah.
All right, I'll describe one song. All right, the title track, Strange Change Machine. That was kind of a surprise how it came together. We were doing a live basic track, and Kurt hadn't written any lyrics or any melody for it, and we worked on it. He came up with this, we have this really psychedelic kind of groovy wah-wah guitar and three-part vocal harmonies. It's a really interesting sounding chorus. It's very Gripweedy, and it's really strong, and it's very, very rock and roll. And right now, I think I'd say that was my favorite song, the title track.
Let me say a little more about that one. This is Kurt talking. I think that I was thinking of that song too, Strange Change Machine, because I set out to kind of write the quintessential Gripweed song. Something that was just super exciting in every aspect. And it took, the reason we recorded the song without lyrics is because I couldn't write them. I just couldn't figure it out. And all I knew is I wanted to call it Strange Change Machine. And if you think about the lyric Strange Change Machine, what do you talk about? What do you write about? How do you sing it? You know, so I had
to work
out.
Yeah, how do you sing it?
I had to work out all that stuff, and one day it hit me, and this was after we had recorded the song, and for a while we were like, oh, this is going to be an instrumental, you know, it sounds good as an instrumental, put it out that way, and I'm like, no, I want lyrics, you know, I hear three-part Gripweed's harmonies, and one day it clicked, I thought about the song in another way, and all of a sudden the whole thing came together, I wrote the lyrics, and I knew it was going to be great, and it turns out we've been playing the song live. And it's been going over incredibly well.
Yeah, that's great.
Just one of those things. So I am probably most proud of that song, just for the sheer, it's just got dynamics. It's got everything for me. So,
well, yeah, I hate to say this, but we're running out of time.
Oh, well, does MK have a chance to give a song?
Yeah, real quick.
Yeah.
About a minute left.
Yeah, well, a minute left. There's, I'll say in a minute, there's two songs, one, Close to the Sun, which is a Kurt song, which is his inner Paul McCartney. You know, this is where he tries to hide it from everybody, but it just seeps out. And when it comes out, it's sweet and beautiful and powerful and amazing. And it's just an amazing song. The other
Thank you, MK.
What's the name of
the other song is called The Law.
Close to the Sun.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Close to Song is Kurt's song. Rick's song is The Law. And this, if there's any kind of theme song for 2010, it's The Law, and it's just incredibly powerful. We use a very powerful speech, you know, which is a first for us. We sample a speech, and it's in there. It's just that shows those two songs represent the amazing range that is on this record, and I love it. So go get it.
Well, it's got me ready. But, hey, guys, thanks so much for being on. It's just been awesome. I love having you guys
on.
Oh,
you're welcome. Tell your listeners, sign up to the Gripweeds mailing list. Go to www.gripweeds.com and sign up, and you'll get some good free music.
There you go. Sign up today. Hey, guys, thanks so much, and we'll keep in touch, and good luck with everything.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having
us.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to John Talk Radio tonight, and next week we'll have Ranger on. a band from Indianapolis. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll go out with a group.
Still on there, MK?
Salad Days.